Max?
Yes.
You ready to get in bed with me?
Yes, let's do this.
Amazing. Everyone, I have Maxwell Fierce. They are a performer, rope rigger, educator, and also a full-time tattoo artist. Thank you so much for coming.
Yeah, thank you for having me.
I'm so excited to have you in bed with me.
Yeah.
Okay, so let's begin. Everyone wants to know, and by everyone, I mean me, about your rope journey. When was the first time you either got tied up or tied someone up?
Well, my rope journey has been an interesting one. It's been kind of like on and off. I've been tying for about 4 years. Initially, it was just with my partner. And when I first started tying, we were monogamous. So it was just me and her. So that was about like 4 years ago. We tied for maybe like a year, just doing like tutorials online, taking classes, that kind of thing.
But where did the interest come from?
Initially, yeah. I mean, I think it's something that I'd always been interested in.
Okay.
I feel like there's like little times in my life that it like came out a little bit. Like when I was younger in high school, like I would draw people in rope. And okay. Yeah. And like when I was really little, like, you know, I'd like play house or whatever and I'd be the daddy. So like there's naturally like times in my life earlier on where like I feel like my king persona was coming out.
Wait, but when you were drawing people in high school, yeah, where had you seen that? Just porn, or like how did you know that it was a thing?
I didn't even know it really that it was a thing. Like I saw it in like anime, okay, or something like that, yeah, and I thought it was cool, but okay, like I never even really put the pieces together that's like something people did.
Mm-hmm.
It's just not something that I was really exposed to.
Right.
So it took me meeting my partner, like finding somebody else that was interested in rope,
mm-hmm,
for me to actually initiate the rope journey. Like I said, it was about 4 years ago. So we started tying.
YouTube was your main source of information.
Sorry?
YouTube.
YouTube, yeah. Yes. Yeah, YouTube, and then classes that I took from, you know, other rope performers,
yes,
that I knew in the scene.
So you really wanted to get good at it?
Yeah, I mean, I always wanted to get good at it, but it was kind of a thing where it's difficult to practice when you don't have somebody to practice on.
Yes, you need someone.
Exactly. So the catalyst for that was this relationship that I'm,
yes,
currently in.
Yeah.
We started tying for about a year, and then it wasn't really working out. My partner ended up actually, over the course of our relationship, we started out in a DS dynamic where I was the top and she was the bottom, and it was like a clear-cut thing. But over time, our relationship evolved and she started becoming more of a dom, when she's actually a pro dom now.
Mm-hmm.
So when that happens, we kind of put our rope journey on pause.
Okay.
Because she was no longer bottoming for me.
Mm-hmm.
So a couple of years went by, and then the pandemic happened, and like during the pandemic
But the pandemic was like 4 years ago. So maybe you've been together more than four years.
We've been together about 7 years ago.
Okay.
7 years, yeah. But my rope journey started a little bit before the pandemic.
Okay.
Put it on pause. And then after the pandemic, I started doing rope a little bit more. I started getting more interested in it during the pandemic, like during lockdown, because we had all that time. I started tying again. And then when we got out of the pandemic and started coming back, I started looking for other people to tie.
Yeah, because she wouldn't anymore.
Yeah, she was no longer interested. Mm-hmm. And then what really catapulted what I'm doing now is the fact that I got a space of my own. So in my tattoo career, about 2 years ago, I opened my own private studio.
Yay!
Yes, that was huge for me. In my tattoo career and in my rope career.
Is it all in the same studio?
Yes.
Right.
Yes. So I then had a space that I could actually tie in.
Yes.
So I was able to put a hard point. And once I put a hard point in, that really motivated me to like really do it.
Because,
mm-hmm, you know, I had the space, I had the place to do it. I'm like, this is it. Let's go for it. So for probably about the past 2 years is really what I is really like the main part of my rope journey, where I've been focusing on tying more and practicing and doing suspension.
Yeah. Okay. Do you ever get tattoo clients that see your rope space and are like, can you, can I be a rope bunny?
No, I mean, surprisingly, I don't have that much crossover. But actually, two of the people that I tie on a regular basis started out as clients. And
as tattoo clients.
Yeah, as tattoo clients. And then we all came to the scene together.
Okay.
I'm kind of relatively new to like the whole party scene and the king scene.
You're good.
I do teach, yes. Yeah. But I've really only been doing it for maybe like two plus years.
Yeah.
Yeah.
Okay. And so have you been teaching for also 2 years?
No.
Or more recently?
The teaching is relatively new.
And performing, how do you perform? Where do you perform? How long has that been happening?
Performing is also, you know, something that I like. It's all kind of happened in the past 2 years, really.
Okay.
Like, my journey has been about like 4 or 5 years long,
but yeah,
there was a lot of pauses in between. And over the past 2 years is really when I've started like dedicating myself to it. Yes. And like finding people and like being in the scene too, like clients, it's kind of there's a separation there, but I find a lot of people at Hacienda, and just through like the play party scene.
So we also met at Hacienda that Max did not remember, but that's where we met.
No, I do remember.
No, you don't.
You had to remind me, but
we met at Halloween. So yeah, Hacienda is like a great place to meet people. Is that where you've met who? Or like clients? People that, well, that's how you got your teaching job. Mm-hmm. But also, what about the performing?
Yeah, performing also.
What does that entail? Like, what does that mean? How do you perform?
Okay, so
it's you topping someone else, you tying someone else up.
I also perform as a bottom.
Okay.
The first time I ever performed was actually at my studio space because I had an art show about a year ago. And at the art show, I did a shibari performance, mm-hmm. and it was kind of nice because...
But you were top or bottom?
I was bottoming in that one.
Okay.
It was kind of nice because I invited a lot of like my tattoo clients and like people from my tattoo world, mm-hmm. that had never seen that before, mm-hmm. and a couple of my kink people. So it was kind of like a clashing of worlds when I did that. It was fun.
That is great.
Mm-hmm.
So performing, is this something you'd like to do more of? Or yeah. Not at the moment?
Yeah, absolutely. I actually just performed this past week at Hacienda as a top, and that was my first time ever doing a topping session performing.
Really? Because you're usually a top.
Yes, I am.
But when you perform, you're a bottom, usually.
Mostly I performed as a bottom, yes.
So how did the difference feel? Like, because you were topping last week.
There's a big difference. I mean, obviously the difference in topping and bottoming is that when you're bottoming, you're just kind of like
receiving.
Exactly.
Yes.
Like you don't have to think much. That's the whole point.
You just let go.
Smooth brain, you know?
Right.
But when you're topping, it's kind of almost the opposite experience where the whole time I was just like hyper focused, uh-huh. you know what I mean? And I actually realized, cause that was my first time topping performing, I actually realized that like 90% of it I never looked up, like from the experience, like I never looked at the audience because I was just so focused on what I was doing.
Are you supposed to?
I mean, you know, like if you're performing, the idea is to like connect with the audience, you know. It's not necessary, especially for like
a kink scene.
I think it's expected because like you're mostly focused on your bottom, which is what you should be doing.
Correct.
But I did realize that, like, I was so focused on what I was doing, I almost forgot that I was performing.
But that's good. Like, you got in it.
Yes, yes. It was great. I think that's the biggest difference.
That's your obvious difference. Mm-hmm. But, like, how did it feel? I mean, like, afterwards, was it the same sense of accomplishment or, like, euphoria or, like...
Well, the similarity between the two is that in a performance setting, I feel like I'm always able to push myself just a little bit further because there's that adrenaline aspect of being watched and like people are seeing what's happening. So both as a top and as a bottom, I was able to, I think, like rise above what I would normally do just because it was a performance. And that was, that's like a huge rush, you know? Yeah. So that's really what I love about performing.
That's great.
Yeah.
You said 4 years ago you were monogamous.
That's true.
And now you're not.
Yes.
So what happened? Like, how did you transition? And did Rope help you transition to being non-monogamous?
Well, Rope was like my introduction into kink. And
but was Rope your first kink experience at ever?
Yes. I mean, officially, yes.
Yeah.
I mean, everybody probably does a little spanking.
Everyone's a little kinky,
or
yeah.
Something, you know. But like... official Rope experience was
kink experience was rope.
And that happened because I, like I said, I feel like I always kind of had, I always, like, there were signs throughout my life that I was like kinky, but I just didn't have anybody in my life to share that with. And I didn't have anybody, like, I just wasn't exposed to it. So I like didn't know any better, I guess.
Right. But how did you open up?
But
your relationship.
Opening up the relationship? Okay, so that was something that it took a lot of time. It was a transition
well,
for sure.
Because if you have one monogamous partner and you both want to transition to non-monogamy, that is like the hardest.
It was very tricky.
It's very challenging.
Yes, okay. There was a lot of back and forth. And like we both knew that it's something that we wanted, but it was kind of like, where's the line? And like we would always have to like draw the line and then step back a little bit and then draw a new line. So it was a lot of back and forth, and that probably lasted about like maybe 2 years of like
2 years deciding, ago everything happened
pretty much. Like my life completely changed 2 years ago. The pandemic, I feel like that happened for a lot of people, that like the pandemic really just like was a catalyst for so much change. And that was true for me too. I think right before the pandemic is when we started talking about opening up the relationship. And then the pandemic hit and it was kind of like, that's not going to happen because we couldn't do anything. And then when we came back from the pandemic, slowly started coming back to parties. And then, through the parties, we'd have like experiences, talk about them, go back to the drawing board, decide what it was that worked, what didn't work. And then till now, where we pretty much have like separate lives, really. Like,
so what does it look like now? What are your agreements now, for example?
Agreements. I think it's kind of like through trial and error, we came to a place where we kind of like both let each other just do our own thing. Especially because when our relationship started, my partner and I, like I said, we had like a clear like DS dynamic where I was the top and she was the bottom. But then over time, when she like kind of evolved in her kink journey, realized she was more dominant to the point where now she's a pro dom. So that just isn't going to work because we're both tops. So I need to like branch out and be able to, you know, play with people or meet people that want to bottom and vice versa. So now we kind of have separate friend groups, you know, date separate people. And it works now.
Okay. And is what's off limits or?
I guess the only thing I would say is like early in our non-monogamy journey, we tried dating the same person. And it was fun. It was a great experience, but it was a little messy.
Okay. But at the same time, like as a couple or individually dating the same person?
Both dating one person.
Yeah, but dating them together.
At the same time.
Right. Okay, yes. But you could like both go on a date with the person, or you could go on a date with them and then she would go on a date with them and so on. And, you know.
When we were in that, I guess you would say triad.
Right.
Sometimes I would go with the other person on a date. Sometimes she would go with the other person on a date. Sometimes we have a double date.
Okay. But it was messy.
It was a little messy.
Okay, yeah. So is that off-limits
now? So that's kind
now?
Of off-limits now, I think, okay. Yeah.
One was
we realized that didn't work.
I think triads, people don't really understand how advanced they are.
Yeah, really.
Because everyone's like, oh my God, I would love to have a boyfriend and a girlfriend. And like, I would, like, same. But at the same time, it's so complicated to keep things not necessarily equal, but like fair and keep everyone happy. And like,
yes.
If you were a couple, like couple privilege and unpacking that. And it's just, it's hard.
It is. I think non-monogamy in general, it's really hard because you have but to so's really monogamy. Be. It's nothing is easy. Let's put it right. That way. Nothing is easy.
Different challenges.
It's definitely different. But I feel with non-monogamy, like you really have to be good with yourself before you move forward with that. Mm-hmm. Because you need to be confident, both confident in yourself so that the jealousy doesn't overtake you. But also you need to be aware of what your boundaries are, you know, what your needs are and what. Yeah, and be able to communicate those things to another person.
If you can't communicate, you cannot be non-monogamous.
Exactly.
Basically.
Exactly.
Okay, so you usually tie people up mm-hmm. unless you're performing.
Yeah.
And are your performances mostly rope-based?
Yes.
Okay. So is it easy for you to go in subspace when you are bottoming? When you're so used to being a top.
Yeah, actually, surprisingly.
But you only bottom from one person too, so.
Yeah, as of right now. It's, right. I would bottom some for somebody else, but it's the kind of thing where I think it takes a lot of trust for me to be comfortable bottoming. So yeah, it's a limited amount of people. But as for rope, I only have one person that ties me. Mm-hmm. And we have a really good dynamic. It's kind of a unique dynamic because I only bottom for her and she only tops for me.
Okay. That's fun.
Yeah.
Okay. And do you tie anyone up or is that also like more special?
There's like degrees, you know, I mean, I do rope privates, so, I will tie anyone up for the right price.
Right.
but I also do tie my friends on occasion.
Like if you're at a party and you have your ropes and someone's like, can I be a rope bunny? Will you be like, okay, or like, no?
I mean, yes, I guess I would. But especially in like a party environment, you can only go so far, I think, with the rope.
Right.
And still be able to have like the communication that you need to make sure that it's safe and everybody's having a good time.
Yeah.
So I think that I generally don't bring my ropes to play parties because especially at Hacienda, it's a little more of like, more like a sex play environment, not necessarily a kink environment.
Right.
But I guess to answer your question, like, yes, I would tie anyone. It just depends on the scenario.
Right. Depends on how much money you got.
Yeah, well, you know, it's got to be the right, it's got to be the right exchange.
Yeah, okay. Okay, because I feel like a lot of people would want to be rope bunnies, but
yeah,
it's not easy then to find a top, like a rigger.
Yes.
So like, right?
Yes. I think on both sides, it's hard to find like tops and bottoms that you really connect with.
Okay.
Like when I first started tying a lot, I got a lot of people that were just like, tie me, tie me, tie me.
Right.
But then you realize, once you start tying, you realize like some of these people, they've never been tied before. They don't have very much experience and like, they're not that serious about it. So then I kind of started like
filtering.
Yeah, exactly. Like filtering down the people that I actually want to tie with. Cause I only have limited time.
Right.
So right. Yes. Yeah. I think when it comes to finding tops, it's a little bit more challenging because I guess there's like more risk involved. Mm-hmm. If you're finding, you really need to find somebody that is going to be, you know, safe and is going into it for the right reasons.
What are the right reasons?
The right reasons is that you want a genuine connection and genuine like exchange, not. It's like, I feel like I've seen a lot of riggers out there that it's really like the people that they're tying is they're just like a way to do their thing, do their skill or do their practice. It's not about like, they're not like connecting with one another.
Okay.
They're not doing it for the purpose of, yeah, like finding, to have a connection with somebody. And
but
to,
is that to wrong? Give a,
yeah, I think so. I mean, not that it's wrong, but it's irresponsible.
Why? Like, why can't you just tie someone up to tie them up?
I mean, you can certainly tie somebody up just to tie somebody up. But when you come, when you're talking about a certain like level of shibari, mm-hmm. it starts to get more dangerous, like especially right. with suspension and stuff.
Yes.
If you're not being mindful of what you're doing, you could actually hurt somebody.
Yeah.
And it's also a mental thing. Like, I know so many people that have been taken advantage of by tops just because they didn't know any better.
Right.
So,
in what way? Because you're not necessarily speaking about sexually. You're speaking about...
It could be sexually.
Right.
It could be sexually. It kind of is a sexual thing. Like,
or like you basically owe me sex if I tie you up kind of thing.
Maybe not owe you sex, like, but like...
implied.
It's implied that you are just... my plaything right. during this experience. Mm-hmm. But that's not the, unless you like already talked about that, yeah. that's not the implied agreement. Mm-hmm. So I think that's what it is.
Okay. And what is the difference between your regular rope tying and shibari? Because it's like two different things. Like not all rope tying is shibari, but all shibari is rope tying, you know?
I'm not sure.
No?
No, I think all rope tying is shibari.
Really?
Yeah.
I thought there was like, because if you do like a boat tie on someone or like if it's like messy or whatever, it's like not shibari. It's just like rope tying. No?
I mean, I think if you're doing it on a human being, that's called shibari.
Really?
Yeah.
Okay. I feel like I've heard someone else say that there's a difference.
Interesting.
Yeah.
I don't know enough.
I mean, you're the expert. But if you say it's the same.
This is my knowledge. There might be somebody who's more an expert than me.
Okay. Okay, good. And how easy is it to actually hurt yourself?
Well, it's... The human body is pretty hardy. So you'd be surprised, like, how much you can take.
Yeah.
But at the same time... It's relatively easy if you don't know
what you're doing.
Right. Yes. Like, it's just about knowing what you're doing. If you know what you're doing, the risk is pretty low. Mm-hmm. If you're just going into it willy-nilly, then there's a higher possibility.
Right. Because I feel like when at Hacienda, I actually got tied up by someone and he told me so many, like, we had a chat about, like, risks
Good.
And safety.
Yeah, yeah. Exactly.
But... It made me feel like it was so easy for me to get, like, to not be able to breathe or, like, get bruises, which is fine by me, the bruises, but, like, you know, to get your circulation cut off. Like, he made it seem like it was a really real risk. And I was like, okay, well, I trust you, so, like, do it. But how big is the risk, actually?
I mean, I guess I would say...
Like, has it happened to you? Like, your limb, like...
Yes, it has happened to me.
Yeah.
Like, for example, I mean, it's kind of like, I guess I would say it's relatively low risk in general, mm-hmm. but it's all about communication and knowledge. Like, if you have the knowledge, if you're communicating, the risk is like almost nothing. Mm-hmm. But if you're not doing that, anytime you're doing kink, there's always going to be a certain amount of like, there's a certain amount of risk involved.
Well, any sexual act.
Any sexual act, yeah. True. And also a certain amount of risk of miscommunication, which yes. can always happen. So that risk definitely always is there. But I don't think it's not like super high.
Okay.
Yeah. It's just something that you really need to be mindful of when doing shibari. Because it's in shibari is something where, For example, if you're doing suspension and you drop something on their head, you could kill them. Like, that's right. actually a risk.
Yes.
So you want to, like, know what you're doing before you go into
yeah,
it.
Yeah, and how to, like, after you finish the scene, how you're going to let them down. Like,
yes.
It's not over until it's over.
Yes. And right. I mean, in my opinion, it's not over until the next day and you check in on them and like right. make sure everything is cool.
I thought you were just going to say aftercare. No, the next day.
Aftercare. Yeah. Aftercare. Aftercare.
Okay. Hey, that's so interesting. Mm-hmm. Okay, wait. And if people don't live in New York and they can come take one of your classes, what are some good resources? Like I want to start from zero. Like, what do I do?
There's a lot of great websites out there. One of the ones I used early on is called The Duchy. That's kind of like a little bit more old school of a website. But the most like comprehensive one I would say is Shibari Study.
I follow them.
Yeah.
Yeah.
Yeah. That's the best one I think out there. Mm-hmm. It's a little bit like straightforward. So that's good for somebody who's like just starting to learn. Mm-hmm. But once you get into it a little bit, you might want to branch out and take some classes from
like in-person classes.
In-person classes. Yeah. I think that's really the best way to mm-hmm. learn. But if you're just going to like start out on your own, YouTube, Shibari Study, that's how I did it. Mm-hmm. I think that's a great way to look.
Okay. And how do you find, you know, your in-person teacher?
Instagram. Yeah. Social media.
Right.
Yeah. Being out in the scene.
Okay. And what should people look out for when vetting someone?
Or experience and, you know, talking to other people that have tied with them, mm-hmm. that kind of thing. I think when it comes to anything like sex work or scene related, it's just about proof that they're doing it.
Okay. You know? Yeah.
If they have a big following, if they have a lot of pictures, if you're able to talk to other people that have worked with them, those are all good things that you should be doing.
Right. And if you at some point don't feel comfortable, you can just leave and find someone else.
Yeah.
Also.
Yes, exactly. Yes.
Okay.
Yeah. Listen to your instincts. That's the biggest one.
Okay. Good. I want to talk about how this has changed your body image, firstly. Mm. Has there been any difference before and after you started tying people up or being tied up?
I don't think so. I mean, I've always been relatively confident in my body image. Just like anyone else in this world, like there's certain
Most of us are really insecure. Yeah,
there's certain, like society ensures that you're insecure about yes. your own body image, regardless of what you look like, basically.
Right.
But I don't think that necessarily rope has had like a huge impact on that, besides maybe just feeling good about myself, like feeling like I look good when I'm tying, I look sexy when I'm in rope. So it's a positive thing, but I don't think it's like night and day or anything like that.
Okay. And what about your confidence?
Confidence?
Yeah.
Yeah. I think that having something in the kink world that I can like claim as mine, I think definitely gives me a lot of confidence because I can be like, you know, when I'm out in the scene or if I go to like a convention or something, people are like, why are you here?
Yeah.
You can be like, well, this is what I do. So it's something that I can gravitate towards.
Okay. And what about the way you express yourself before and after? Has there also been a change?
What do you mean express myself?
Like the way you express your identity, your, I don't know, like just yourself. Like yeah. has that had any impact on it? Or I mean, it all really happened like 2 years ago, but did rope have anything to do with it? Or did it all, was it all just part of the journey?
I think it was something where, like I said, I feel like I've always been a little bit like gravitated towards kink yeah. and rope in general, just because I find it really beautiful, mm-hmm. And like mysterious. And since getting into it, I think that it's just become another like obsession for me, another like form of self-expression. Mm-hmm. Like I'm an artist. That's who I've always been.
Yeah.
I'm a tattoo artist, and this has now become like the most recent artistic endeavor for me, mm-hmm. like something that I really want to like get good at and master so that I can create something above like just straight tie, you know, something that's mm-hmm. more artistic, mm-hmm. maybe even like weave it into my artistic practice in photography. And also it's really inspired my tattoos. Like I do a lot of Shibari tattoos.
Yeah.
So
I was just thinking
it's
that.
It's kind of my whole world now. Like, I don't know when or how this happened, but mm-hmm. I tattoo Shibari. I do Shibari. I top Shibari. I bottom mm-hmm. Shibari.
You teach it.
I teach it. Oh my God. It's like my entire world. I don't know.
Yeah. So what I really want to know is if it has, like, how has it changed you as a person? If it's not just, it give you a place in the scene, in the mm-hmm. community, but how else has it affected or impacted your life?
I don't know. I haven't really given much thought to that. I feel like it's maybe a means for meeting other people. Mm-hmm. I think that in general, like, I've kind of always been a little bit introverted and like kind of like the sensitive artist type. You know, like when you're an artist, you spend so much of your time alone, like drawing at home. So you're not really like out being social. Mm-hmm. And doing Shibari and getting into the scene has definitely opened me up in that way. Like I found that I've become a lot more social over the past couple of years. And it's really like the motivation of wanting to meet people to tie with and learning more about the scene and something like that.
Okay. It's been very positive mainly, but if you had to compare the Max from 10 years ago and the Max from today, like,
well, the Max didn't exist because that's not my real name.
How long ago have you been using Max?
Probably the same amount of time.
2 years.
Literally everything in my life happened 2 years ago.
Okay, what would they say, or would they be surprised? Like, what would their reaction be if, you know, you could like travel and they would see you? And what do you think they would say? Or what are the differences between you and this Max, which is not even that Max? That Max did not fucking exist.
The new me, the Maxwell. I feel like I really like come into my own a little bit more in as the Maxwell, mm-hmm. because before I feel like it was kind of my art and me were the same thing. Mm-hmm. So it seemed like whatever happened to me in my art life, I took as a personal thing.
Yeah.
But having like a persona, like a kink persona, like a scene persona, it allows me to maybe like be a little bit more expressive in ways that I wouldn't be able to just as like my normal everyday self. So it's definitely improved my confidence.
But would they be surprised if they could see you?
Who, like?
Like your 10-year-old past self.
My 10-year-old past self?
Yeah. Would they be like, that makes sense? Or like,
oh yeah, I think so.
Yeah.
Because like I was saying before, yeah. I feel like there are signs early on that this is something that I always wanted to do. Mm-hmm. I mean, I think 10 years ago me would be very proud.
They'd be like, of course you go by Max.
Well, Max is actually, it's my porn name. So do you know how you get the porn name?
Yeah.
I don't know if
well, there's like a thousand ways of getting your porn name.
There's a thousand ways. But yeah, the way that I always was taught was that you take your dog's name and the street that you lived on when you were little.
Stop.
Yes. And my dog was Maxwell. So Aww. Now I'm Maxwell.
That's cute.
Yeah.
Okay. Because I always see like on social media, like, you know, it's just a list, like your first name, first name letter, last name, first letter, whatever the fuck.
Right,
and then
right.
Combine.
Uh-huh.
Wait, but Fierce, that was not the street you lived in.
No, I didn't do the street part.
Okay.
Yeah. Fierce is
I was
because,
like, there's no way that was such a coincidence.
No, that'd be so cool. I would go on Fierce Avenue.
Yeah.
No, I decided to, I'll take the first name part because I like Maxwell.
Yeah.
I also have kind of like a unique regular name, so I was going for something that was like average, mm-hmm. I suppose.
Wait, who calls
also,
you?
Like, also, I wanted something that was going to be, like, not gender conforming because mm-hmm. I'm non-binary. Mm-hmm. So it could be either.
Wait, but does everyone call you Max now, or are there still people?
Pretty much.
Okay.
I still go by I can say it. Legal. My name's Galen, professionally as a tattooer. So I still go by Galen.
Wait, so if someone books you for a tattoo appointment, they use your other name, mm-hmm. but then... But those two clients that transitioned from tattooing to rope, What do they call you?
They call me Max now.
They had to transition to Max.
They're used to it now.
Okay.
Mm-hmm.
That's really interesting. Okay. But other than that, like, all your friends just call you Max, basically. It's just professional.
Pretty much, because the majority of my friends are in the scene. You too. So.
From 2 years ago.
Since the pandemic, pretty much, yeah. Yeah, pretty. Okay. Exactly. Yeah.
Okay. Yeah, but you don't mind when people use your legal name or whatever.
I don't, but it sounds weird now to hear it.
Yeah, everyone you've calls adopted Max. Yeah. Have you ever thought about legally changing it or not?
No. It's because it's like an alter ego, you know?
Yeah. No, but you've basically made that your normal ego. Like, that's you now.
That's the majority of my life, yes.
Like, now the other one feels foreign, so you're Max.
It's true, but if I made that my actual name, then I would no longer have
the persona.
The superhero, right. You know?
But it's so cool that you created someone and you managed to became them.
Yeah.
You know?
Manifestation.
Fake it till you make it.
That's how you do it.
I have to ask you, would you rather? Ooh, would you rather never get tied up again or never tie someone else again?
Oh. Well, I guess. I mean, I don't want to choose that.
You don't. I mean, in real life, you don't have to, but for the sake of my game.
Because I generally top, I guess I would have to say I would like to
never tie someone else up again. You can't even say it.
I would prefer to only top than only bottom.
Right.
But that would be too hard of a decision because it's also kind of the thing where, for me, bottoming informs my topping. Because if I don't understand the experience of the bottom, how am I ever supposed to understand what I'm doing to them when I'm topping?
Yeah. Okay, yeah. It's just a game. It's fun.
Yes, I
understand. No one's going to make you not bottom again.
Yes, I understand.
Okay, but it would be so hard to give it up then.
Yeah,
even definitely. If you do the other most of the time.
Yeah, for sure. Yeah, I personally, I think that that's true in any kink, really. Like, if you can't bottom, then you can't necessarily be a proper top.
Do you think that applies for anal sex?
Yeah. Maybe controversial, but yes.
I love that. I mean, honestly, I feel like some people that have never received, they really don't understand. They're doing to someone else.
Also, on this planet, we only have the one chance to be here. How could you possibly be like,
I only want
one side of it. I don't want to experience the other one. Who knows about that? Society's a little weird.
Yeah.
You know what I mean?
I know exactly what you mean. Okay, lastly, what about rope rigging and sex?
Yes.
If you had to choose. Because now, like, rope is your fucking life.
Wait, if I could never have sex again?
Yeah.
No. Forget sex. Rope. No contest there.
Fuck that. Okay. But
sex
it will
is
be
my
so
first
hard.
Love, yeah. So.
But then what will you do?
What would I do?
Yeah, just tattoo. Find another
There's
outlet
lots
for
of
art.
Other things you can do, yeah.
Okay. So sex.
Sex. That's my choice.
Okay. Now, are you ready to turn off the lights?
Let's do it.
Okay. Perfect.